entertainer, and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Larry Adams, Nostra Dennis, and Christopher Hart. The American Adversaries, Drive Time.
Yeah, believe it or not, you don't get no stand-in host for the American Adversaries Drive Time like other shows. You get the real deal on Christmas Eve thanks to AM 660, The Answer. I'm Larry Adams, and I would like to wish all our listeners a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. I hope we can remain positive and hopeful for 2015. Frankly, a lot of my friends are apprehensive about next year and are anxious to kiss 2014 goodbye. Our host knows a thing or two about kissing. He's been wanting to kiss our president since our first show, Christopher Hart.
That leaves you speechless every time, doesn't it? Thanks for being with us tonight. Just as Lair said, we are live. It is our Christmas Eve special. And as he also said, we do wish you a very, very Merry Christmas. And we'll be here until 6 o'clock. 407-774-8255 is our number. We'll take limited phone calls, if any, because we just want you to kind of sit back and enjoy tonight's show. That was Larry Adams. I am Christopher Hart. Our executive producer, Nostra Dennis, is in studio with us.
No. I'm the janitor filling in for the doorman, sitting in for the receptionist for Nostra Dennis.
Okay.
No, not on this
well,
show.
We'll take you, whatever. And we got another guy who's going to be sitting in for us for about 5 minutes or so in the second half of the show. I know you're going to enjoy him. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge tonight, all decked out in his Disney Santa memorabilia there. He looks great with the ears and the red hat. So we're all set to go, folks, and we certainly hope you do enjoy tonight's show. To that end, I want to thank Cafe Positano, Firm Foundation Home Inspections, Just Toys, Classic Cars, Vacation Travel Planners, My Liberty Threads. Am I leaving anybody out?
Roxy Pacifics.
How could I ever forget Roxy Pacifics? All of our sponsors are going to let us do the show tonight commercial free. You'll only hear one commercial. That'll be for Cafe Positano at the bottom of the hour, just to kind of help us break things up a little bit. And because New Year's party is coming up, want to remind you about that. But, you know, please, and Refresh Computers. How could I forget David Levitt over at Refresh Computers? And they have been slammed. And so I thank you and our listening audience have gone to Refresh Computers to take care of those needs at your Christmas time. And don't forget, they're there every day, or, you know, at least year-round. So do frequent our sponsors. We so desperately need them, and we need you, too. All right, so what we're going to do tonight is we're going to give you a little quick news wrap. There has been some news happening. There was another shooting in Ferguson, and lo and behold, we have videotape. And yes, this black man did have his hand up in the shooting position, unfortunately for him. But Nostra Dennis will fill us in on that and a couple other things. And then what we're going to do is we're going to set into doing some readings for you tonight. We've got both versions, if you will, of the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. We're going to read from the scripture. I'm going to read from Matthew tonight in chapters 1:18, verses 18 through 25, and all of chapter 2. We are also going to read from Chris Kyle's book, American Sniper. We're going to read a passage written by Chris Kyle, and then we're going to read something that is in the back of the book that was written by his parents that was read at his memorial service. And as I said, we've got a big fella lined up for the second half of the show, and we also have some great Christmas music that we're going to be playing for you tonight as well. So sit back, enjoy the show. If you're driving, just crank the radio up, wherever you're at. crank the radio up, and enjoy tonight's show. But first, Nostradamus, what is the news of the day, please, sir, and where can people find out more about it?
Thank you, Chris. I'm just going to spend a couple of seconds on each of these stories because we put up links to each of these stories and where we found them on our Facebook page. Go to Facebook, search American Adversaries. You'll find us. If you haven't liked us yet, please do like us. If you have any comments on the stories of the day, please leave them there. And if we read them and they're any good, we will share them with the rest of the listening audience. We're back on the air live on Friday. So if there's any good comments on today's stories or the ones we put up Friday, we will be sure to share them with you. Okay, started off with George H.W. Bush, 90 years old, remains in the hospital today. He was admitted to the facility on Tuesday night in Houston Methodist Hospital as a precaution for what a spokesman called shortness of breath. Spokesman for Bush, Jim McGrath, said, "Everything I'm hearing is positive. I think they're going to be very cautious with him. We're hoping it's a very Merry Christmas on the medical front for everyone here." Looks like he's going to be spending Christmas Day in a hospital.
He's had some lung problems here before, so.
Yeah, respiratory problems. Yeah. All right.
Could have been from jumping out of airplanes three times in the last 15 years.
No, nah, I think that clears out your lungs.
You think?
The atmosphere is a little thinner the higher you go, I think.
Could be. Yeah. Okay. Right. Couple of shooting stories, and I hate to bring everyone down this holiday season, so I'll just be brief. Up in Jacksonville, right up the road from us here in Florida, firefighters were the target of a drive-by shooting Tuesday night by a gunman who sprayed a group of them with bullets. Luckily, only one of them was grazed by a bullet that apparently ricocheted before it hit him in the arm. Officials say that firefighter who was injured was very shaken up, but said he would continue his shift on Tuesday night. They call the cops the finest. They call the firefighters the bravest. I don't dispute that at all. Right near Ferguson, in a town outside St. Louis called Berkeley, an officer was questioning an 18-year-old and another man about a theft late on Tuesday night, when the 18-year-old man pulled a 9mm handgun on him. The officer stumbled backwards but fired three shots, one of which struck the victim, killing him. Berkeley's just a few miles away from Ferguson, Missouri. And the 18-year-old was not named originally, but now apparently we've got his ID as Antonio Martin, 18 years of age. The police officer, who is white, and shot Antonio Martin, who is black, he's 34 years old. He's a six-year veteran of the Berkeley PD, and he's on administrative leave pending an investigation. That's standard operating procedure. That's nothing.
And evidently, there was a quote-unquote protest, which basically turned into a riot and a little bit of looting last night. Before, I guess, the videotape was released, which showed clearly that the officer was and had every right to shoot the man. I mean, he pulled the gun on the officer, extended his arms fully straight, pointing it down the barrel at the officer. What would anybody expect the officer to do? But of course, before
that
we
means
ever
nothing to the protesters,
well,
Chris.
Yeah, before right. we ever even found out the first fact, they were out there, you know, raising Cain over it.
Yeah, it turns out that the officer was not wearing body camera at the time, and the dashboard camera on his cruiser was not activated because the patrol car's red lights were not on. But did get video.
Well, it was what happened is the police officer had pulled into a gas station, a convenience store with gas pumps, kind of like a racetrack or a 7-Eleven. And the video camera for the store caught the whole thing. It's a little grainy, and it's in the distance, but you can clearly see what was happening. And the shame is that, obviously, like Lair said, people just jumped right off the bat, jumped to conclusions. But the tragic part about this whole thing now is, now this kid had a criminal record, and he was heading down the wrong path. But nonetheless, you can't believe that he wasn't being egged on by all this recent clamor. And now his family and that of the police officers are devastated.
Their lives for Christmas. Have changed forever because of this.
And for Christmas.
Thank you, Big Al.
Yep. Well, let's move on to Ohio and something that does not look like a race is really a motive because it turns out it was black-on-black crime. But the liberals would have a headline that reads as such, 16-year-old child killed over a pair of shoes. Okay, here's what the story was. This 16-year-old was too late to get on the line to buy a pair of limited edition Nike Air Jordans. And so he decided what he was going to do was take them from someone who'd already bought them and was leaving the store. Problem was, The guy who bought them and was leaving the store had a gun, too.
Oops!
Pulled the gun on him when he pulled the gun on him, and the kid trying to steal the sneakers ended up shot, ended up dead.
Oh, well. Why do I have a limited amount of compassion here?
All right. Once again, you can find these stories and a lot more today on Twitter.
Let's just go a little bit nicer, right, and we'll end on a funny note.
Okay.
Well, funny but kind of sad.
All right.
Jay Johnson, the U.S. Director of Homeland Security.
You don't have to call me Johnson.
Yeah.
He called himself out today. I'll give him that. He, in a press conference, he mentioned and admitted that he was supposed to be reading the Pledge of Allegiance in front of a group of elementary school students at PS 143. He said he forgot how the pledge goes.
But he's reading the pledge.
Well, he needed to get it written down. So
somebody
he
had to put
it
up on the prompter for him.
It's only a couple of lines. It's not a big deal. But if his boss uses a prompter, why shouldn't he? So all this news is available at our Facebook page, American Adversaries.
And once again, folks, we're going to be more active at directing you to our Facebook page, where we're going to be putting up stories every day. We're going to have new stuff on our website every day. We want you folks to please take advantage of that. And also,
every day.
Yeah, put this in your plans for the new year and the holiday season here is to join the American Adversaries Army. Make that a little gift to yourself. It only costs $5 a month, and it's so easy to do. Just go to AmericanAdversariesRadio.com and click the Enlist button, and there you'll be. And we will gladly accept you in the Army and make you a part of what we're doing around here.
And if $5 a month is not enough for you to pay, if you think you want to pay a little bit more, well, you might want to become a higher-ranking officer. So check it out. Go there and see what's there.
And you can also make a one-time gift if you'd like to do that as well. That's going to be it for the business end of things tonight, folks, because we want to really kind of put you in the mood for Christmas and get you in the mood for the new year as well. And with all of this tragic news here in our nation, it's almost like we're on the verge, if not in the very beginning of the throes of a civil war. I want us to reconsider and put our faith in God, because that truly is the only answer at the end of the day. So to that end, we're going to read to you some things tonight, folks, that hopefully will generate the seed of spiritual reawakening here in Central Florida and spread it elsewhere. I'd like to start with an article that ran in this past weekend's Wall Street Journal. It's entitled, When the Guns Went Silent. It's by Robert Sapolsky. He writes writes the journal's Mind and Matter column every weekend, every other weekend. I read now. On Christmas morning, we struck up a board with, quote unquote, a Merry Christmas on it. The enemy had stuck up a similar one. Two of our men then threw their equipment off and jumped on the parapet with their hands above their heads. Two of the Germans done the same and commenced to walk up the riverbank, our two men going to meet them. They met and shook hands, and then we all got out of the trench. So wrote a British soldier named Frank Richards, referring to the first Christmas of World War I, 100 years ago tomorrow. Up and down the 400-odd miles of trenches on the Western Front, men risked their lives with similar acts, meeting opposing soldiers in, quote-unquote, no man's land. Wary and unarmed, they made their way out of their trenches, taking steps that day that, a day earlier, would have guaranteed their death at the hands of sharpshooters and machine gunners 100 yards away. The relaxation of hostilities spread, and what has come to be called, quote-unquote, the Christmas truce, took hold. Soon, soldiers were holding joint burial services for the dead. They began trading goods. British soldiers had been given holiday tins of plum pudding from the king. German soldiers had received pipes with a picture of the crown prince on them. And before long, the men were bartering these holiday gewgaws that celebrated the enemy's royals. Eventually, soldiers prayed and caroled together, shared dinner, exchanged gifts. Most famously, there were soccer matches at various locations played with improvised balls. The truce mostly held through Christmas and, in some cases, even to the new year. It took senior officers' threats for fighting to resume, and such comprehensive battlefield peacemaking never happened again during the Great War, nor since. Courts martials were brought against those involved later in even brief Christmas truces to retrieve the dead. The Christmas truce was an extraordinary event, not just in World War I, but in the history of warfare. But its familiarity and fame, just last month, a short film dramatizing the episode produced by the Sainsbury supermarket chain created a sensation in the UK, should not lead us to ignore less dramatic instances of cooperation and trust building across battle lines during World War I. Indeed, these more modest episodes may be the key to understanding how, in our own day, we might work to lessen political violence and hostility, even among the most bitter enemies. If the British and the Germans could do it in World War I when they were slaughtering each other with machine guns and mustard gas, certainly, pray God, we can do it here in the United States. Now, for the first rendition of "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" by Nostradamus, who he's going to narrate it for us.
This is called "The Night Before Christmas in the Military." The author is Sue Carabine. "'Twas the night before Christmas, and Nick couldn't believe all the letters and cards he'd just lately received. Looking closely, he saw the majority came from children whose writing seemed almost the same. The gifts that they wanted was not for themselves. Would Nick find their folks with some help from his elves? Our parents are part of U.S. military forces. Just help them be happy, cried thousands of voices. Protecting their country, they feel very proud. But we miss them so much that we're under a cloud. Well, Santa's kind heart was quite touched by their words. If I failed to do something, 'twould be quite absurd. He began making plans, something special this year, kissed his dear wife goodbye, and then left with his dear. As they flew through the skies on this sparkling night, Nick reread a letter of the little boy's plight. Dear Santa, it started, my first name is Tim. My dad flies a jet, but I'm lonely for him. Mom sent his gifts early, with Sue's and Bob's, too. But mine would be special if he got it from you. He'd made a small compass from twigs and green clay. His note said, for you, Dad, so you won't lose your way. Nick laughed to himself, quipped, now this should be fun. Are we ready to fly, boys? Let's visit Top Gun. They sped on their way, quite a sight to be seen, and soon cruised beside a swift-winged F-16. Tim's dad, codenamed Blaster, could not quite believe the sight from his cockpit on this Christmas Eve. He saw Santa waving, a grin on his face, looking almost as though he was itching to race. Nick held up a package for Blaster to see, who magically found the gift there on his knee. He unwrapped the package, then read Timmy's card, and a warm feeling started way deep in his heart. He'd been feeling sorry and quite sad, it is true. No family at Christmas makes anyone blue. You won't find Christmas bells, stockings, or fun in a cockpit like this one while flying Mach 1. He saluted Saint Nick and said, while I'm away, make sure that my family enjoys Christmas Day. Now that was a challenge, Nick called to his dear. But it's not going to get any easier, I fear. The next request asks us to dive way down deep. This young man serves proudly our U.S. Navy fleet. His mom and dad wrote, Santa, we have a son whose life's underwater. Now that's not much fun. Our Jim's missed so much, and we want him to know we'll celebrate Christmas when he returns home. All of his presents wait under the tree. There'll be turkey and lamb for the whole family. You know what this means, St. Nick said with a grin. Boys, when was the last time we went for a swim? We know young Jim serves in a nuke submarine. We'll appear on its sonar, perhaps make a scene. Then scuba gear on and with a great splash, they dived in the ocean as quick as a flash. While tracking the sub's screen, Jim heard a strong bleep and spotted a strange sight in the great briny deep. He heard a faint tapping on the sub wall outside. It's Morse code for me, Jim excitedly cried. Nick's sending a message from family at home. We'll always be with you, wherever you roam. Jim thought, at this Christmas, we must be apart. But we'll all be together, down deep in my heart. And there in my quarters, I have a small tree, with gifts for each one of them, chosen by me. Now after this visit, and on through the night, St. Nick and his dears saw incredible sights. A bomber called Stealth, and a Black Hawk, and Cobra, then carriers and AWACS, which made Nick quite sober. He knew soldiers and sailors who served proudly on these, special forces and rangers, commandos and SEALs. Nick met with them all and was truly inspired. Their courage and integrity he greatly admired. Then something else happened on this memorable eve, a gift to a family they just couldn't believe. A young Marine, Beth, who was serving abroad, had a daughter on home who she truly adored. Now Amy, though quite ill, wrote Santa a note. Just one wish I have, Nick. Please bring my mom home. So dear Santa Claus went to work on this task. He knew without thinking he'd have to move fast. He pulled a few heartstrings, some here and some there, and this mommy Marine soon soared home through the air. Beth crept up the driveway with nary a sound and peeked in the windows, snow deep all around. She watched her young family gather around the trim tree, then opened the door, softly said, "It's just me." Then all stopped and stared, not believing their eyes. The kids screamed and giggled while Mom and Dad cried. Then Beth's little daughter, without any qualms, looked up at her mother, rushed into her arms. "I knew you would come. Santa answered my letter. I told him with you here that I would get better." Now these special families, on each Christmas day, accept such conditions, whatever comes their way. Since Santa Claus knows this, he loves to help out and always includes them on his Christmas route. Saluting the military, Nick said, "What a sight. May the peace of this season surround you tonight."
And now a different version by Clement Moore, "The Night Before Christmas." 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, and hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snug in their beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mama in her kerchief, and I in my cap, had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer, with a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. "Now, Dasher, now, Prancer, now, Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen, to the top of the porch, to the top of the wall. Now, dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves that before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle mount to the sky. So up to the housetop the coursers they flew, with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur, from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he'd flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled! His dimples, how merry! His cheeks were like roses, his nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke it circled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a round belly that shook when he laughed, like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work, and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk, and laying his finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
The first foreign military member to fall into the hands of the extremists since an...
Tonight's American Adversary Soundbite RX News Minute. SoundbiteRx.com, a great way to be better informed. Today's Soundbite RX News Minute is brought to you by My Liberty Threads. American made, America proud. MyLibertyThreads.com.
Hi, this is Christopher Hart once again for SoundbiteRx.com, where they wish all of you a very, very Merry Christmas. But they're still hard at work over there with a lot of brand new stories today. I'm just going to give you a couple. Why does Obama want relations with, why does Cuba want relations with the United States? I equated Obama with Cuba. Well, I guess that's understandable. But you'll find that story brand new today at soundbiterx.com. The U.S. embargo is disappearing. So, too, should the Cuban dictatorship. At least that's the way we see things. That's not the way the Castro brothers see things, however. Voters are tired of Obama's governing approach. We've been tired of it a long time. It's about time others get tired of it, too. And it's about time, folks, you go to soundbiterx.com. There's a lot of good stuff there today and every day. We'll be right back.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care.
Christmas Day radio address to the nation. Cabinet Room, the White House, December 25th, 1982.
Merry Christmas from the White House. Nancy and I wish we could personally thank the thousands of you who've sent us holiday cards, greetings, and messages. Each one is moving and tells a story of its own. A story of love, hope, prayer, and patriotism. And each one has helped to brighten our Christmas. Some of the most moving have come from fellow citizens who, unlike most of us, are not spending Christmas Day at the family hearth, surrounded by friends and loved ones. I'm thinking of the 12 U.S. Marines who sent us a card from Beirut, Lebanon, where they'll spend their Christmas helping to rebuild the shattered hopes for peace in a suffering land. And I'm thinking of the petty officer serving aboard the USS Enterprise, who asked that we remember him and his shipmates this holiday season. "Christmas in the Indian Ocean is no fun," he writes, "but it's for a very good cause." Well, that's right, sailor. You're serving a very good cause indeed. On this, the birthday of the Prince of Peace, you and your comrades serve to protect the peace he taught us. You may be thousands of miles away, but to us here at home, you've never been closer. One of my favorite pieces of Christmas mail came early this year, a sort of modern American Christmas story that took place not in our country's heartland, but on the troubled waters of the South China Sea last October. To me, it sums up so much of what is best about the Christmas spirit, the American character, and what this beloved land of ours stands for, not only to ourselves, but to millions of less fortunate people around the globe. I want to thank Mr. Gary Kemp of Neenah, Wisconsin, for bringing it to my attention. It's a letter from Ordnance Man First Class John Mooney, written to his parents from aboard the aircraft carrier Midway on October 15th. But it's a true Christmas story in the best sense. "Dear Mom and Dad," he wrote, "today we spotted a boat in the water and we rendered assistance. We picked up 65 Vietnamese refugees. It was about a two-hour job getting everyone aboard, and then they had to get screened by intelligence and checked out by medical and fed and clothed and all that. But now they're resting on the hangar deck, and the kids, most of them seem to be kids, are sitting in front of probably the first television set they've ever seen, watching Star Wars. Their boat was sinking as we came alongside. They'd been at sea 5 days and had run out of water. All in all, a couple of more days, and the kids would have been in pretty bad shape. I guess once in a while," he writes, "we need a jolt like that for us to realize why we do what we do and how important really it can be. I mean, it took a lot of guts for those parents to make a choice like that, to go to sea in a leaky boat in hope of finding someone to take them from the sea. So much risk, but apparently they felt it was worth it rather than live in a communist country. For all of our problems with the price of gas and not being able to afford a new car or other creature comforts this year, I really don't see a lot of leaky boats heading out of San Diego looking for the Russian ships out there. After the refugees were brought aboard, I took some pictures. But as usual, I didn't have my camera with me for the real picture, the one blazed in my mind. As they approached the ship, they were all waving and trying as best they could to say, 'Hello, America sailor. Hello, freedom man.' It's hard to see a boat full of people like that and not get a lump somewhere between chin and belly button. And it really makes one proud and glad to be an American. People were waving and shouting and choking down lumps and trying not to let other brave men see their wet eyes. A lieutenant next to me said, 'Yeah, I guess it's payday in more ways than one.' We got paid today, and I guess no one could say it better than that. It reminds us all of what America has always been, a place a man or woman can come to for freedom. I know we're crowded and we have unemployment and we have a real burden with refugees, but I honestly hope and pray we can always find room. We have a unique society made up of cast-offs of all the world's wars and oppressions, and yet we're strong and free. We have one thing in common. No matter where our forefathers came from, we believe in that freedom. I hope we always have room for one more person, maybe an Afghan or a Pole or someone else looking for a place where he doesn't have to worry about his family starving or a knock on the door in the night, and where all men who truly seek freedom and honor and respect and dignity for themselves and their posterity can find a place where they can finally see their dreams come true and their kids educated and become the next generations of doctors and lawyers and builders and soldiers and sailors. Love, John." Well, I think that letter just about says it all. In spite of everything, we Americans are still uniquely blessed, not only by the rich bounty of our land, but by a bounty of the spirit, a kind of year-round Christmas spirit that still makes our country a beacon of hope in a troubled world, and that makes this Christmas and every Christmas even more special for all of us who number among our gifts the birthright of being an American. Until next week, thanks for listening. Merry Christmas, and God bless you.
And God has blessed us with the finest military in the world and that the world has ever known. And that is not because they're the best trained and the best equipped, but it's because they have the biggest hearts. They have American hearts.
I'll add that to our police officers, too. Absolutely. And our other first responders.
I'd like to read now, we'd like to read now, from American Sniper, written by Chris Kyle with Jim DeFleece and Stephen McEwen. and this is on page 230. And remember, folks, our military are still serving. There are a number of them over in Afghanistan, and they're still dying in Afghanistan. We cannot forget them tonight. And then there are our military who are serving at posts all over the world and all over this country who will be away from their loved ones. The movie, The Sniper, about Chris Kyle, is opening tonight in some theaters, and it'll be shown over the Christmas holidays. Please take the time to see it. It's done by Clint Eastwood, so I'm sure it's going to be a very, very good movie. And it certainly is a very, very good subject. I read now from American Sniper. I really liked Dauber, even though he was a new guy. He was a sniper and a pretty good one. He could hold his own in a firefight and trading insults. I had a real soft spot for him, and when it came time to haze him, I didn't hit him much. Even if the guys joked about it, Legend was one of the better nicknames you could get. Take Dauber. That's not his real name. At the moment, he's doing what we'll call government work. The nickname he had came from a character in the television series Coach. There, Dauber was the typical dumb jock type. In real life, he's actually an intelligent guy, but that fact was of no consideration in his getting nicknamed. But one of the best nicknames was Ryan Jobs, Biggles. It was a big, goofy name for a big, goofy guy. Dauber takes credit for it. The word, he claims, was a combination of big and giggles that had been invented for one of his relatives. He mentioned it one day, applying it to Ryan. Someone else on the team used it, and within seconds, it had stuck. Biggles. Ryan hated it, naturally, which certainly helped it stick. Along the way, someone later found a little purple hippo. Of course, it had to go to the guy who had the hippo face, and Ryan became Biggles the Desert Hippo. Ryan being Ryan, he turned it all around. It wasn't a joke on him, it was his joke. Biggles the Desert Hippo, best 60 gunner on the planet. He carried that hippo everywhere, even into battle. You just had to love the guy.
And this is from page 389 of that same book, American Sniper. This is a letter that Chris's parents wrote to him that was read at his memorial. We shared Chris's laughter, smiles, pranks, jokes, and stories. He always had a story to be told, and only in the way Chris could express so vividly. There were so many laughs. Even the 2 o'clock April Fool's calls and the New Year's wake-up surprises were funny, at least after the fact. As parents, we have such dreams for our sons. They're unlimited. We encourage Chris to dream big. He did, and he achieved those dreams, even more than he could imagine. Chris, God had a plan for your life much bigger than we can even comprehend. You have touched so many lives with your infectious laughter, your side grin, your great sense of humor, your compassion and tender-heartedness, and of course that twinkle in your eye. You loved life and lived it full blast. We stand here today brokenhearted, knowing that death may end a life, but your spirit will live on for eternity. It will never end our immense love for you. You have been an example of standing up for your convictions, pride in your country, and true love for Texas. Our hearts ache to feel once more those all-engulfing and loving bear hugs you always gave, to hear you say, I love you, Dad, or I love you, Mom, to see you smile, hear you laugh, and watch you with your family. As parents, all we could give you was love, direction, and courage to succeed and believe in yourself. You took that and lived life to the fullest. You had a passion for everything you did. God anointed you with your name, the Protector. Your life embodied the full meaning of the word. You were tender to the young, compassionate with the wounded, and sympathetic with the less fortunate. The Lord had his hand on you the moment you were born. You were destined for greatness.
I'm going to continue on. We could not be any more proud of you, son. Not in your medals, honors, or notoriety, but in the loving son, committed husband, and father, the truly amazing man you became. Your courage of conviction, your strength to persevere, and the hope that survives the disappointments are the keys to your success in life. You embraced and lived the slogan, courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. You knew that a successful life is not measured in how well known you were, but in how well respected you were. Not in your power to take, but in your willingness to give. Your success is measured by the height of your aspirations, the width of your vision, the depths of your convictions. Chris, you define the true meaning of a successful life. Until you spread your wings, you will not know how far you can fly. Son, heaven has no limits. Soar to heaven and keep watch over us. Son, we are so thankful for having you in our life for the years that God gave us. We are so blessed to have shared your happiness and your sorrow. We are so proud that we watched you achieve your goals. You were and will always be a true blessing. Son, you will live in our hearts forever. We will rejoice in the memories that you have given us. We are so brokenhearted, but we will persevere as we grasp onto your strength. We will stand at ease because we know that you are standing guard. We have loved you, and we will continue to love you even more.
That is from the book American Sniper, about Chris Kyle, by Chris Kyle. And the movie opens tonight in some theaters. Please do take the opportunity to see it. When you think about it, folks, that letter that his parents wrote to him that was read at his memorial could have been written by any set of parents for any of our fallen heroes. Men or women.
And gentlemen, okay, I was just going to say, they're releasing this other stupid movie that the Koreans are going to be upset about. They are probably going to be far more upset over a film like this that has so much more meaning for Americans.
As I said, these brave folks, in a way, folks, are our saviors, our earthborn saviors, if you will, because they save us from tyranny, from hatred, from the kind of slaughter that has now become commonplace in so many parts of the world, even right here in Mexico, and of course in the Middle East. And if ever we ever needed their saving power, it is right now. And if ever, ever the world needs the saving power of Christianity and Jesus Christ, it is every given moment of every given day, and in particular this time of the season. I read now from Matthew. And I'm reading from my Holy Bible, one of them, the New International Version, which belonged to my brother's dear friend, who he used to scuba dive with often, who served in the Special Forces, who died in a tragic diving accident. And I was fortunate enough to have this Bible fall into my hands. I read now from Matthew chapter 1, verse 18, the birth of Jesus Christ. This is how the birth of Jesus Christ came about. His mother, Mary, was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be with child through the Holy Spirit. Because Joseph, her husband, was a righteous man and did not want to expose her to public disgrace, he had in mind to divorce her quietly. But after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary home as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. All of this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. When Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had committed him to, and took Mary home as his wife. But he had no union with her until she gave birth to a son, and he gave him the name Jesus. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, Magi from the east came to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the one who has been born King of the Jews? We saw his star in the east and have come to worship him." When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed, and all of Jerusalem with him. When he had called together all the people's chief priests and teachers of the law, he asked them where the Christ was to be born. "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they replied, "for this is what the prophet has written. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For out of you will come a ruler who will be the shepherd of my people Israel." Then Herod called to the Magi secretly and found them out from them the exact time and star that the star had appeared. He sent them to Bethlehem and said, "Go and make a careful search for the child, and as soon as you find him, report to me so that I may worship him too." And after they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were overjoyed. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said. "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, which is where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious, and he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who were trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, "He will be called a Nazarene." And that is the story of the birth of Jesus Christ according to Matthew. And that's a story, that's kind of the version we don't hear as much as the virgin with the shepherds and the manger. This tells a much scarier story, that Herod knew, and he tried to kill the baby, Jesus. And if it were not for Joseph taking heed of a dream, we may never have been privileged to have our sins cleansed by the death of Jesus Christ. That is the reason for the season. We cannot ever forget it, but we do want you folks to enjoy your Christmas and have a happy and wonderful new year. Lair, a couple seconds?
Well, yeah, just like to say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah for those of you still celebrating, and we cannot wait to join you again Friday.
All I can say is Merry Christmas, everyone.
And with that, folks, we're going to leave you with a little Tanya Tucker. And What Child Is This? Night, everybody.
What child is this who lay while shepherds watch our keeping. Then sends Christ the King, whom shepherds guard and angels sing. Obey the Son of Mary. Why lies he in such mean estate, where ox and ass are feeding? Good Christian, fear for sinners here. The silent word is pleading. Nails, spears shall pierce him through. The cross be borne for me. For you. Hail, hail the Word made flesh, the Babe, the Son of Mary. So bring incense, gold and myrrh. Come, peasant king, to own him. The King of Kings, salvation brings. Let loving hearts enthrone him. Raise, raise the song on high. The virgin sings her lullaby. Joy, joy, for Christ is born. The Babe, the Son of Mary. The Babe, the Son of Mary.